Hey, I'm Sam Sanders, and I'm hosting a new culture podcast. It's called Into It, from Vulture and New York Magazine. Each week on the show, we get into the pop culture that we just can't stop thinking about. Like Beyoncé. I mean, we'll talk about other things too. But let's be real, Beyoncé is going to be a big part of the show. And that's the that on that. Into It, the weekly culture show from Vulture, with new episodes every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And Chris, we are not even 12 hours removed from the Mets sweeping the Yankees in the first half of the Subway Series. Now, granted, it's two games. Calling it a sweep is maybe a bit of a stretch, but it was two very exciting games where the Mets just simply appeared to be the better team against the Yankees. And that is something that I never thought we would see. I thought if the Mets were to squeak out a win, or even if they were to sweep it, I would have thought it would have been sort of, you know, luck-based, where it just seemed like, you know, the Mets, some things broke their way because the Yankees have been so dominant this season. But both games seemed to, at least from my vantage point, to be a clear example of the Mets being the superior team. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think coming into it, obviously it was kind of easy to not feel the best after they had dropped 2 out of 3 to the Padres over the weekend. But these two games were just awesome. And as somebody who came into this one and a lot of the years, Subway Series, thinking, we've had enough of these. It's kind of old, you know, I'm over it, that kind of stuff. The first game was great. Wound up getting a ticket from a friend to the second game and being there last night for the Marte walk-off. All of a sudden, it's pretty awesome again.
Yeah. It's funny how, you saw a double turn happen over the two games. It started off where a lot of Mets fans are going into the Subway Series saying, this doesn't matter, it's not a big deal. And then all of them sort of saying, oh no, actually, this is awesome. And Yankee fans having the exact opposite reaction, where sometimes, you know, they're saying there was one tweet that our friend Vass tweeted, which was, it was two tweets from the same Yankee fan. And one was from the top of the first in game one, and it said, I thought the Mets were supposed to be good, LOL. And then the next one was from the top of the ninth, and it said, Subway Series doesn't matter. And so I feel like we're just seeing people in real time have their opinions changed about this stuff. Which again is totally fine. Great. Let's enjoy it when the Mets are good. I do think that the novelty of the Subway Series has more or less worn off. At least for me, it doesn't get me excited in the same way that I think for a lot of people it does. But I mean, just the bigger news here to me is that the Mets beat the best team in baseball 2 days in a row. And if it wasn't for Buck Showalter's strange decision to put David Peterson in the eighth inning, I think that it could have been two more decisive victories.
Yeah, and hell of a job by Seth Lugo relief of him. All of a sudden, you don't want to get your hopes up and think, okay, that's the guy they have. They can lock him into a setup spot in the bullpen for the stretch in the playoffs. But it was a glimpse of what we remember him being like.
Right.
And it was very nice to see. I hope there are more appearances like that one. But, the whole, I don't know. My experience at the game last night felt like Mets and Yankees fans were both sort of thinking along the lines that I saw Matt Carpenter said to Pete Alonso, hey, this kind of feels like a potential World Series matchup, right? And I think the series was a reminder that the Mets are one of those teams that should be considered a contender to get to that point. The Dodgers and Yankees have the best run differentials in baseball, and it's not particularly close, but the Mets are right up there at the top of that next tier in that department.
Yeah.
You know, the Astros are slightly better than them in that regard, but you look at the teams, and it's not to discount the other teams that will make the playoffs, but you'd have to say that the Yankees, Astros, Dodgers, and Mets are probably the favorites to get to the league championship series in their respective leagues at this point. And
right.
Nothing's guaranteed. We know this as Mets fans, but I do think and hope that these couple of games, as you said at the top, where they just looked like the better team, I hope that gives Mets fans a little bit of that confidence that I was referencing last time.
Yeah,
we spoke. Let's have some confidence first.
Right, right.
Before we assume Juan Soto is a Met.
Well, not only that, but you know, this past week the Dodgers lost 2 of 3 to the Nationals. Statistically the worst team in baseball. The Houston has lost their last 3 games, and the Yankees have got swept by the Mets. So it's you know, it just shows you that the Mets do belong in that conversation. That these other teams are not invincible. I know the Astros made the Mets look really bad when they played earlier this season, but you know, they're not a perfect team, and this shows that you know the Mets belong in the conversation. And one of the things that happened this week, too, is that the Mets opened up their lead on the Braves a little bit. They are back at 3 games ahead of the Braves right now. And that happens when you win 3 in a row. But it also just shows the Braves are maybe coming back to earth a little bit as well. And so, you know, right now, so much of our show the last couple of months has just been us like looking ahead to the schedule and just using the schedule as a tool for us to feel optimistic about where the Mets are. And, you know, right now it certainly looks optimistic. We got 3 games against the Marlins this weekend, then 3 against the Nationals. Then you get that brutal 5-game stretch with the Braves, which could be, you know, a big deal. And then 3 against the Reds. I mean, the Mets have a chance over the next, and then of course the Phillies, Braves, Phillies, Yankees. So they're really, I mean, until we get to the middle to the end of August, and the end of August, we said the Dodgers again. So this isn't going to be, this is a month of big ups and downs schedule wise, but it seems to me like this is where the Mets can really make a push to just plant their flag and have that confidence to say, we are one of the best teams in baseball, you know, come at us. I also want to add to that, that, you know, we are, it seems like a couple of days away from Jacob DeGrom rejoining the Mets, and that's going to make a good team a whole lot better. And we are here ahead of the trade deadline, which means that the Mets are hopefully going to do a couple of things to improve the team. You know, they got Daniel Vogelbach since the last time we spoke, and it seems like they are in the market for a reliever and maybe another bat. And, you know, that's this team that is already feeling pretty good has the potential to be in an even better place in just a couple of days. Is there any move that at this point, now that we've sort of seen the team look good for a couple of days in a row, is there how are we feeling about, you know, the deadline? Is there anything you particularly want them to go after right now?
Sure. Yeah. I think all of the things that have been mentioned, certainly bullpen help. I understand trading Colin Holderman. I don't think that's a trade to lose sleep over, but he had been a useful arm out of the bullpen. Granted, they have a lot of those, but also a lack of, hey, we trust this reliever in a huge spot. So bringing in some bullpen help, the rumors that have been out there with talking to the Cubs about Wilson Contreras and David Robertson are particularly appealing because Contreras can really hit. He can play catcher. Maybe that doesn't have to happen all the time. I know some people out there have concerns about his defense behind the plate, but I say bring those guys on board. And you look at it, Vogelbach is definitely a useful, very useful hitter against right-handed pitching, and can be a bat, a power bat off the bench when you know, when there's a lefty starter, but an opportunity presents itself later in the game. But there's still some opportunity to upgrade on particularly Dom Smith and JD Davis's bench spots. And it sucks because they're both players that we've liked, and really they're players who have done good things for the Mets in recent years, but they're just not doing them now. So whether it's Contreras as a catcher slash DH, and he's the guy who's bumping one of them from the roster, or just really any other hitter, right? I'd be happy with any of that. So obviously, if they'd like to trade for Juan Soto and Contreras and whomever, sure, sign me up. But I feel like they can have a checklist between now and 6 p.m. on August 2nd that would be reasonable to complete. And they're already in a good position. It's just you look at this opportunity that they have as real contenders, and you don't get to make trades anymore after the trade deadline. You're really stuck with players who are designated for assignment and let go or claimed on waivers, you know, that kind of stuff. But you can't do those post-deadline waiver trades anymore. And that's been the case for a few years now. But I think it's the first time under those rules, like the Mets have made things exciting in the latter part of the season, certainly in 2019, in 2020. Obviously, there was only a latter part of the season. And then in 21, they kind of started to fade even as they traded for Baez, right? Mm-hmm. But I think what I'm trying to say here is this is the first time they've approached a deadline looking this good. And different outcomes against the Yankees shouldn't have changed that approach. But I really feel like that puts an exclamation point on the trade deadline for them. That here's a reminder that they can hang in there with any other good team. And, you know, you should supplement that. And really, this is your last chance to bring in major league players who can be even just depth in case you have an injury come up in August or September. At that point, you have what you have. You can't really do much about it. So, yeah, here's hoping that they address all of those things. Any of those needs particularly jump out to you as like, oh, they got to do this and I don't care if they do that? Or
I mean, to me, the bullpen is the biggest issue right now, because I mean, you we were talking before the show about Lugo looking, you know, really nice in the game last night, and I think that's great. And I think that, you know, the idea of working David Peterson out of the bullpen is not a bad idea, but they need somebody to help with that bridge between the starter to Diaz, because Diaz has been, I mean, as good as any closer in recent memory that I can recall. He has just been, I mean, unbelievable, right? And so love that, love watching him go. But if a starter isn't going seven innings, or rather isn't going eight innings, then I don't feel great about where things stand right now. You know, there was talk of a couple different, you know, Dave Robertson has been talked about. There's somebody else that the Mason Avenue Slack got excited about. Now I can't remember offhand who it was. But, you know, anybody who's a legitimate seventh, eighth inning guy, I am totally for getting, you know, one or two of those players. To me, that is the team's biggest glaring hole right now. And it's also the one that I think doesn't have a chance to sort itself out otherwise. Now, I want them to do everything. Don't get me wrong. I am not saying bullpen or bust. I want them to be going after another bat. I think they should be, you know, seriously looking at another catcher, if, you know, with Contreras being obviously the choice there. But I wouldn't be mad if there was a different catcher that they were going after, because they're not sure about, you know, just the production they're getting out of catcher right now, especially with McCann still hurt. But I feel like, you know, there's a world in which they call up Francisco Alvarez, and he is both a bat and a catcher to help them. There is a world where, you know, Vogelbach gets really hot, and because he is a strong side platoon player, that, you know, he is starting most of their games for them, and all of a sudden the DH position is more set than it was, you know, 2 weeks ago. There is a world where DeGrom comes back, absolutely lights out, and McGill comes back in a few weeks, and he's looking good too, and all of a sudden the starting pitching is as deep as it's been in some time. The option I don't see happening is somehow the bullpen fixes itself through internal means. I just don't see a realistic path forward for that. And so because of that, that is where I would focus most of my attention. However, that Cubs trade, I mean, that would solve so many problems for the Mets for the rest of the season. I mean, all that is rental. So that's not, you know, that is not a move to build for the future. But I think right now you're just looking to give your team the edge, you know, to bring the Mets offensively. I mean, I don't think they're ever going to get to the run differential of the Yankees or the Dodgers this season, because those two teams are just having insane offensive seasons. But, you know, to just elevate their offense considerably with Contreras and Vogelbach now in the fold as well, and then to have Robertson as that reliable bridge to Diaz, like, to me, that is just, that is such an exciting possibility, even if it turns out that Robertson is kind of a shithead. Which has been, have you seen all this about the World Series shares?
No.
Apparently he actively was pushing for players who only came up for a couple days, and specifically also some staff, like coaches, not coaches, but you know, when teams get a World Series, there are shares given to like clubhouse managers and stuff like that. And he was very vocal against that. He just wanted the players to get the shares, essentially. And so I had seen that a lot of teams are down on him for that reason. And I agree. Fuck that guy. That's a terrible opinion. But you know what? Let everyone else in the clubhouse tell him he's a shithead after the Mets win the World Series with his help. So, you know, that's just how, I'm viewing this this particular problem right now. But yeah, I mean, let's worry about that when it becomes an actual problem, not now. And again, if we're having like a good person contest, Major League Baseball is not always the best place to get combatants for that contest, because there's a lot of players that I think we all root for that if we had a 10-minute conversation about politics or social issues, we'd probably, you know, if we met, you know, the average MLB player in a bar, we probably would not like that guy. So I think judging a player, I mean, there are certain things obviously that will push, you know, me over the edge and say, you know, I'm not going to support that player. Domestic abuse being the one that sort of, you know, pops into my head most clearly because of the Mets having had a couple of domestic abusers on their team in the past. But in terms of just being kind of a shithead, I think that's sort of the norm for Major League Baseball players.
Sure. Yeah. I think it would not be a deal breaker. It would just be something that we know about him if they were to trade for him.
What makes an Effort Road Trip even more epic? When you get to hit the highway and stay connected with your team at the same time. There's no reason to settle for anything less as a baseball fan. And with T-Mobile, you have it all at your fingertips, because T-Mobile has the best 5G coverage in the game. These days, when you're out and about, you want to use your phone for everything. From staying on the right track with GPS, finding local restaurants, streaming your favorite podcasts, like this one, of course, and catching your favorite MLB team on the go so you don't miss a beat. This summer, thanks to T-Mobile 5G, I'll be heading out on my travels without a care in the world and won't have to worry about FOMO from missing a walk-off win because I'm on the road. So step up today, fellow baseball fans, and make sure to switch to T-Mobile, the network with more 5G bars in more places. T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network. See 5G device, coverage, and access details at T-Mobile.com.
The Iowa Lottery was out there saying on a regular basis, hey folks, check your ticket. Somebody's got $16 million. And it was sort of this mystery. Why hasn't anyone come forward?
I'm Phoebe Judge, host of the podcast Criminal. True stories about people who've done wrong, been wronged, or gotten caught somewhere in the middle, told by people who know them best. Like a man who successfully figured out how to negotiate with his father's kidnappers after some trial and error.
They were just like, for that price, we won't even tell you where he's buried.
And a 12-year-old who solved a family mystery.
There were three little fingerprints. And I remember in junior DA camp, I was like, oh, fingerprints. This is definitely some evidence. Then we can find whoever broke into my grandmother's house.
Discover the unexpected side of true crime.
There were no security alarms whatsoever. The file cabinets were not even locked. So that gave us enough information to plan the actual break-in.
Listen to Criminal now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. It's sitting here this close to the trade deadline. The Mets have not had a bad month this season.
No, June was their worst month. And they even came out of that with a winning record.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously you want those months, that, like the June that the Braves had is the ideal, right? They went 22-5 or something.
Yeah.
Just something ridiculous. But to be this consistent, and I think it's a combination of everything that's gotten them there. Obviously, the big takeaway for me is I was walking out of Citi Field last night was I think I tweeted it too, was just, it was not long ago at all that suggesting the Mets sign Max Scherzer would be ridiculous because they never would have even considered it. And even Starling Marte feels like I know the contract is similar to Granderson's and obviously they did sign that contract with Granderson. So maybe it's not as outlandish, but for if the Wilpon era Mets had somehow found enough money to trade for Lindor and extend him, there is no way Starling Marte would be added to that roster that had Lindor on it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll even say this. If in this fictional world, somehow the Mets did sign Max Scherzer last offseason, they're not getting Canna Marte and who was the third signing they made, right?
Escobar.
And Escobar. Yeah, in the same, like, breath.
Right.
There's just no way that happens.
Right, no. And hey, Escobar just had a very nice series, being a big part of the Mets reclaiming or claiming the lead, really, in the first inning of the first game. And then, of course, in the ninth inning last night. But it's nice to see. I know a lot of our crew and maybe some other Mets fans are really down on him, but you look at what he's doing, it's not like he's not hitting like 2022 Robinson Cano, right?
Right.
Which, by the way, any concerns I had that he still had something left in the tank and the Mets would miss out on it, I think at this point I can say I was wrong.
Yes.
But Escobar is not doing 2022 Cano. He was hovering a little bit below league average, I think, coming into the series. He might still be there in terms of his overall stats, but he's been a capable bat and one who I think is still a very useful piece. Now, if they get some other big name, I mean, we didn't even touch on the Red Sox are spiraling. They've got several players who are expiring contracts. Some of them are huge names. If the Mets were to swing a deal for one of them and it's an infielder and it pushes Escobar into a bench role, then hey, great. I think he'd adapt well to that, and I think you could deploy him even more efficiently than they have been. But if they don't, he's not the biggest problem. There's I always like when, if a guy is an overall below league average hitter, but has some pop in the bat and can still come through with those big hits sometimes, especially big extra base hits, there are worse things to have on a major league roster. And
absolutely,
you're talking, you know, bottom third of the order here.
Right. Yeah. Last thought I want to leave us with before we get to our music picks for the week is, you know, if you had told me going into the 2022 season, you're not going to have a DeGrom start till August, you're going to lose Scherzer for 6 weeks or whatever it was in the middle of the season, Escobar, one of your big free agent signings, is going to have a down year. Robinson Cano is going to be so bad that you're going to eat $40 million to release him from his deal, and the Mets are still in first place. I literally don't know how I could have, like, narratively constructed that in my head. I don't know how I would have made sense of that statement. But, you know, this has been more than almost any other Mets team I can remember. This feels like a truly, like, 25-man effort. Every week you feel like the entire team has contributed, or most of the team has contributed to their success. It just feels like the team, no one is having, like, I mean, I know Lindor's having a good year, I know Alonso's having a very good year, but overall, like, this just feels like a well-constructed team working as a team and doing well. My friend Anthony, who's a listener, so hello, Anthony, he's a big Yankees fan, and he texted me last night. He said, like, last night's win essentially was a win by the free agents that the Mets signed in the offseason. And I said to him, like, yeah, it's amazing what a functional front office can do for your team. But this really does look like a team that was just built with the knowledge that, yes, there's going to be the knowledge that they're going to need every person on this roster to contribute. This isn't, and I know that is in baseball, that's more common. Like, you know, in the NBA, you can have a very successful team with one or two stars. You can't really do that in baseball, but this feels like a particularly team focused, their wins are coming from the entire team, especially the entire offensive piece of the team. And that's just exciting to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And I like that your friend, you know, had the sort of same takeaway that I did. I guess Escobar felt like a guy that they maybe would have signed, right?
Yes.
He might have been the only guy they signed, but...
Yes. He would have been their one off-season move
The year. And even in my hypothetical scenario, Lindor never would have been here either. And regardless of what the owner was willing to spend, or what the front office was willing to take on in their long-term plans, I don't think Scherzer comes here without Lindor already being on the roster. Obviously the money helped make that decision too, but he may have not even considered it.
It just showed they were open for business and they meant it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
well,
good time to be a Mets fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what a great day. And you know, I hate that there's an off day again today.
Right.
Because when the team wins two games like that, you just want to see them go out and win another game tonight. I'm on fire for Mets baseball right now, and we got to wait till tomorrow for the game.
Yeah.
But
yeah, totally.
That's all right. Until then, though, what is your music pick for this week?
So a lot of the time I try to throw in something fresh, something that I haven't recommended a bunch of before, but Ty Siegel's new record is just too good. So I'm dipping back into the well there. It's called Hello Hi, and the single off of it, I believe, is the titular song of the record, to borrow a phrase from one of my favorite TV episodes of the Upright Citizens Brigade. That song has the full band and is, like, really catchy, makes great use of stereo. I love it. But the rest of the record is pretty much just acoustic. There might be some electric guitar in there too, but it's very much got a solo acoustic feel to the whole thing. And he's got a ton of harmonies on there. He's always been good at that. He's a great singer. And sometimes he plays really heavy music, and I like that side of him. And it's more of a scream. And then sometimes he relies heavily on his acoustic guitar and his voice. So I'm still getting to know this record, but it's just very, very pleasant. I was, you know, looking at the track list on Bandcamp this morning, and somebody in the like listener reviews said it's a perfect summer record, and I couldn't agree more. So I feel like I say this a lot now at this point, but if you have listened to the past recommendations and you liked the other Ty Siegel records that I recommended, then I think you're going to love this one. And if you haven't, you know, we've talked about certain music lining up with certain times of year on the show before.
Yes.
And this time of year, Mets are riding high. It's warm out. Listen to this record, and that might take you down the whole Ty Siegel rabbit hole. And if you like it, I think you'll like the rest too. So there you go.
Very nice pick. I'm looking forward to listening to that. I have not dug into that one yet. So I have been on a bit of a jazz kick lately. I don't know what spurred this, but I mean, I listen to jazz pretty consistently, but the last month or so, I have been very, very jazz focused. And I came across a drummer named Brian Blade playing with a sax player I really like called Joshua Redmond. And so I started just digging into Brian Blade's other work, and I found his work as a band leader. He leads a band called Brian Blade and the Fellowship Band. And I was totally unfamiliar with Blade's work, you know, pretty much at all. I'd probably heard stuff that he had played on, but I did not know it at all. And I was just poking around on YouTube for some live stuff, and I found a performance by the Fellowship Band, and it sort of blew me away. And so their most recent record came out in 2017 called Body and Shadow, and that's what I want to recommend today. It's definitely jazz, right? There's all of these sort of traditional jazz elements there. There's a lot of, you know, improvisation of sort of solo sections, but there's also a lot of really just like moody and atmospheric parts, and it doesn't feel as traditional. I think that for a lot of people, like, so my dad was a big jazz guy. My mom hates jazz, and she used to call it just like blippity blop music, where she'd just be hearing somebody like honk on a solo, and it wasn't her thing. I think I could put this on, and my mom wouldn't have that like aversion to it. So if somebody out there is not the biggest like post bop jazz fan because of the sort of you know, the intensity of the solo work, or sort of the just, you know, the speed of sort of someone just like blowing a solo really, really intensely, this doesn't really have that. This is a much moodier, a much more layered sound. And it's not like it's a crazy lineup. I believe on this record, it is, you know, bass, sax, piano, and drums. It is not this crazy, you know, different type of jazz band. They just make music that feels, I don't know, it's just, to me, it is relaxing, and it's beautiful, and it's interesting. And yeah, I've listened to it a lot this week. So again, it is called Body and Shadow by Brian Blade and the Fellowship Band. So as always, I appreciate the fact that we have you know, that we're recommending stuff that hopefully if there is another Mets podcast that does music recs, I can't imagine them recommending Ty Siegel and Brian Blade this week. So I'm always happy that we're offering something a little bit different for the people out there.
Yes, I agree. And one quick, just the name Blade. This is not the Draft and Prospect podcast that is from Complex to Queens. God, I messed up every word in that sentence. But all time amazing name of Mets drafty this year, Jansen with a Z, Blade Tidwell. Like,
that's Jansen, not even Blade. My favorite one.
No, I know, but like Blade, I couldn't help but bring up.
Yeah.
But what is your favorite one?
I'm trying to look up the last name, because it is an amazing Zebulon Vermillion.
Yes, A+. That one that is like actually good. The other one is like,
no, they're both excellent names. Don't get me wrong. What's amazing is that Zebulon Vermilion was named after the explorer Zebulon Pike. Like this guy, this kid just has a name, and he's from Missouri. I thought this was going to be like an international, a guy from some exotic locale. No, he's in the middle of the country.
Nice.
Just blows my mind. I believe he actually came up like playing in Kansas, which he had to be the only Zebulon in the Kansas system. Yeah, yeah. Kansas high school baseball world. But yeah, That's a nice little plug, though. Our minors crew went above and beyond with the pod stuff for the draft week. Go back and listen to that stuff if you're interested in the draft at all. I am very interested to talk with them. I've been thinking about how I need to speak to them about maybe doing like this year. Like right now, we should be doing a podcast about last year's draft and seeing how those guys did in their first professional season. And, you know, I would love to see the same conversation happen next year. But anyway. Go to Amazing Avenue for that podcast, for all of our other podcasts, for, you know, for news and game threads and analysis. All of it's there. The trade deadline's coming up. We're going to be super busy in the next week because of the trade deadline, and it's going to be just, it's going to be fun, chaos, and hopefully Atlanta Mets a bunch of big players. Go to Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Wherever you get podcasts, you can find this show. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And, you know, let's just keep the positive energy going. And so if you want to tweet something fun about the Mets, Chris is on Twitter at Chris McShane. I'm on Twitter at Brian Isnapp. And until next time and every time, let's go Mets.